there were several times yesterday when I envisioned standing up here to preach today and somebody that's here today not being here today. Had a lot of fear. I'm sure we all had different thoughts going through our minds, and made it a little difficult for my final preparations into today's lesson, so I hope it's not too noticeable in the delivery of the lesson, but a lot of thoughts, and I'm sure we all still do. A lot of our neighbors suffering here locally, at the very least. The lesson today we're going to talk about, certainly had this prepared long before yesterday. It's kind of sometimes eerie when I've either just preached something, and I think the last time I preached a sermon about being prepared for, then we went through a whirlwind of horribleness as a congregation. So it's maybe I should just stop. Maybe wait till I get here at the building and pick what I'm going to preach by flipping in the Bible and put my finger on it, and then. But we're going to talk about having forethought so we're not unprepared for things that might come. I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, there are some things you can't plan for. We've talked about many times how time and chance happens to us all. Ecclesiastes 9:11. So the most prepared people on earth can't be prepared for everything. But we are taught of God in various ways and various lessons to think ahead, to plan, to think about things both physically and spiritually. I want to begin in Luke chapter 14 as Jesus is teaching a principle that we often talk about, counting the cost of discipleship. And in that, he used a principle about planning to be sure you're going to be able to finish. Are you going to start something without being able to finish it? A lot of people are very spur of the moment. We have some members that are very spur of the moment. Y'all drive me nuts. Very spur of the moment, down to the last minute. And you know who you are, I won't pick on you. But in some things, that's okay. In some things, I envy some of our brethren that they don't think too much about some things, because I certainly overthink everything. And put a lot of thought and drum up scenarios in my mind that the likeliness that they would happen are pointless. But I'm always way over prepared for most things because of that. Jesus teaches us to take forethought. In Luke 14:25, beginning, he said, "There went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said to them, 'If any man come to me, hate not,'" meaning prefer not, "over his father, mother, wife, children, brethren, and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." So he lays down what you're supposed to be thinking about. Are you going to be able to love him above everything and everyone else? That's the beginning principle. To illustrate that, he gets into this. He says, in verse 28, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it?" So if you're going to build something, right? Let's say you're going to go to Lowe's. You have to have a budget. You have to know, this is how much money I can afford. You're going to go to a Lowe's, a Home Depot, or wherever to buy building materials. Now, if you're really not smart, and you got like $50 in the bank, and no credit, and you decide you're going to go build a shed, so you go to a Lowe's with $50, you're not even going to be able to buy the hardware, let alone the lumber and everything else that you need. You're going to do a lot of shopping for nothing. But what if you've got, let's say, $800, and you go to Lowe's, and the guy tells you, "Oh yeah, you should be able to build a shed for $800. Not likely, by the way, just FYI, not likely, even if you do it yourself. But you start buying wood, and what you do is you get this little pickup truck, and you start putting wood in there, and you do a little bit at a time, and you go and you start building. You know what you're going to end up eventually in your backyard with is maybe a deck and a couple of walls and hope that you can get back to it later. Because you didn't plan it. You didn't think ahead. You didn't prepare. You didn't measure. You didn't do any thought into what's going to happen. So you're going to end up with something half built, three quarters built, if you're lucky to get that far. Your $800 is gone. However long it's going to take you to save up to start getting the rest, you soon figure out that wood costs a lot more than you thought. And hey, by the time you get back to it, it might even cost more. So what's going to happen? You're not going to finish this product. It might rain. It might do other things and even destroy some of the work that you have done. Then he says in verse 29, "Less happily after he laid the foundation, not able to finish it, behold, all begin to mock him." Well, what are people going to do? What's that in your backyard? But here a tower, and you're thinking of a city, a nation in these previous times. Maybe they're building a watchtower. You don't even get it above the city walls? Oh yeah, you're going to be a mockery. He says in verse 30, saying, "This man began to build and was not able to finish." Now remember, his point is, don't follow me unless you've counted the cost and are prepared to lose whatever it takes to finish. Because being a faithful disciple of Christ sometimes comes with high cost. He then says in verse 31, "Or what king, going to make war against another king, sits not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? So your army is outnumbered. Have you counted that cost? He says in verse 32, "Or else, while their other is a great way off, he sendeth ambassage and desire conditions of peace." Sometimes there's a better thing to do, and forethought will lead you to that conclusion. But if you wait and you go to war and you're outnumbered 2-1 and you lose, hindsight is not foresight. A lot of lives, a lot of blood has been spilled because you didn't count the cost. You didn't think ahead of time, can we even contend in this battle? What a terrible ruler that would send off his army to be slaughtered because he didn't think ahead. So Jesus takes those principles and he says in verse 33, "So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all he hath, he cannot be my disciple." Jesus wasn't teaching something new here. He was teaching that you need to think about what you're going to do before you do it and measure whether you're going to accomplish the task. It's an Old Testament principle too. Look at Proverbs chapter 20, verse 18. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 18 says, "Every purpose is established by counsel, and with good advice make war." Decisions ought to be thought through. We ought to think, okay, once I make this decision, am I going to be able to do this, this, and this? What are the foreseeable difficulties that may arise? Some things, they're foreseeable. And maybe like just to take that shed building, maybe I'm going to talk to somebody else who has a shed in their yard and ask them what the process was like. Maybe I'm going to talk to John Reese, who's built one. What's the process like? You know what you never do? You never foresee the things that go wrong. Or you go and you buy the very best lumber you can get, and then you get home and you find out, you know, because 2x4s aren't really 2x4. And you get home and the wood's a little moist, and you start one day and you go out 2 days later and it's twisted a little bit. You're going to have to do some things to fix this, to change it. Have you included the bumps in the road that come along with a construction project? Unless you are extremely skilled, most of the time when you're building something, something's going to come up. Do you have that little bit of fun set aside for the oops and uh-oh moments? For the "this didn't work out exactly the way I foresaw it" moments? Even the best of blueprints with the most intelligent architects, there's bumps in the road and you got to make an adjustment. Well, if the project's going to cost $800, and all you have to your name to do it is $800. You don't have enough. Because the likelihood is something's going to arise that you didn't anticipate. Oh, I'm going to tear down this wall and I'm going to add on to this room and that room. And then when you tear down that wall, you find mold. You've got to count the cost. Am I ready to find out what's behind that wall? That odor that's been there for 10 years, all of a sudden you find out you have some kind of infestation. What now? Projects generally tend to lead, if you talk to anybody who starts a project, right, car, house, it generally tends to compound. I didn't think about that. So you want to have some foresight. It's more than likely going to turn out to be more than I originally thought. Something might arise. Especially if your house is built in El Paso. Once you tear down the wall and find out something's not there where you thought it was, like, there should be a 2x4 here. It's not. Whoops. Now I have to rethink it. So thinking ahead, anticipating what's probable, what's likely to occur. It's not going to leave you 100% without harm. But at least you know going into it that the cost is generally going to be more than I originally estimated. How prepared am I to deal with that? And once I get so far, is there a turning back? Because what if I get too far? There's a certain principle there, right? Start following Jesus and get so far and then turn back. The later end is worse than the beginning. 2 Peter 2, 20 through 22. Count the cost. Count the cost. Am I willing to go through with this? Now look back at the book of Hosea chapter 12. Decisions often have to include thinking about consequences. What's the end result of something? In the moment, this may seem great. And this decision I'm about to make, it may even start off to be awesome, amazing. Hosea chapter 12, verse 7 says, "He is a merchant, the balances of deceit are in his hand. He loveth to oppress. And Ephraim said, yet I'm become rich. I have found me out substance in all my labors. They shall find none iniquity in me that were sin." So Ephraim here, Ephraim's a tribe, descendant of Joseph, Genesis 46 and verse 20. The tribe of Ephraim had this mentality of, we're getting rich and nobody can hold us as sinful for it. It was a prospering tribe. Verse 9 says, "And I that am the Lord thy God from the land of Egypt, yet will make thee to dwell in tabernacles in the days of solemn feast. I have spoken by the prophets, I have multiplied visions, used similitudes by the ministry of the prophets. Is there iniquity in Gilead? Surely they are vanity. They sacrifice bullocks in Gilead, yea, their altars are heaps in the furrows of the field. And Jacob fled into the country of Syria, and Israel served for a wife, and for a wife he kept sheep. And by a prophet the Lord brought Israel out of Egypt, and by a prophet was he preserved. Ephraim provoke him to anger most bitterly. Therefore shall he leave his blood upon him. As reproach shall his Lord return unto him." In chapter 13, we're going to go through verse 4. "When Ephraim spake trembling, he exalted himself in Israel. But when he offended in Baal, he died. And now they sin more and more, and have made the molten images of their silver and idols according to their own understanding. All the work of craftsmen, they say of them, let the men that sacrifice kiss the calves. Therefore they shall be as the morning cloud, as the early dew that passeth away, as the chaff that is driven with the whirlwind out of the floor, as the smoke out of the chimney. Yet I am the Lord thy God from the land of Egypt, and thou shalt know no God but for me, for there is no Savior beside me." Ephraim was doing good, wealthy, prospering. Had an elegant history. And God said, but they turned to idols and they're going to be like the morning dew. Gone. Now, they didn't foresee that. You see, they thought that their treacherous acts that were leading them to prosperity set them up safely. They didn't weigh the consequence of sin. They didn't think about what was going to happen as a result of the way that they had become mighty in wealth and comfortable in their ways. They didn't think about the consequences. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 13. God had long ago in the Old Testament had great concern about Israel's short-sightedness. How they were only focused on the immediate and didn't consider what was down the road. In Deuteronomy 13, beginning in verse 18, it says, "Of the rock that begot them thou were unmindful, and hast forgotten that God formed thee. And the Lord saw it, he abhorred them because of the provoking of his sons and his daughters. And he said, I will hide my face from them. I will see what their end shall be, for they are a very froward generation, children in whom is no faith. They have moved me to jealousy, that which is not God, they have provoked me to anger with their vanities. I will move them to jealousy with those that are not a people. I will provoke them to anger with a foolish nation. For a fire is kindled in my anger, and shall burn in the lowest hell, and shall consume the earth with her increase, and set on fire the foundation of the mountains. I will heap mischiefs upon them. I will spend my arrows upon them. They shall be burnt with hunger, devoured with burning heat. With bitter destruction I will send the teeth of beasts upon them, the poison of serpents of the dust. The sword without terror within shall destroy both the young man and the virgin, the suckling also and the man of gray hairs. And I said, I will scatter them in corners. I will make them a remembrance on them to cease from among men. Were it not that I feared the wrath of the enemy, let their adversaries should behave themselves strangely, and lest they should say, our hand is high and the Lord hath not done all this. For they are a nation void of counsel, neither is there any understanding in them." Notice verse 29. "Oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would consider their later end." I'm in Deuteronomy 32:18-29. I said something else. Sorry. Deuteronomy 32:18-29. Hey, I told you at the beginning of the lesson, if the delivery isn't there as normal, yep. So I just read the proper scriptures. I just told you the wrong reference. The proper scriptures are Deuteronomy 13:18-29. Verse 29 is the emphasis. Oh, that they were wise, that they understood, that they would consider their later end. When I look up and everybody's sitting here going, where are you? See, La Vista Mall. That's where I was when I was preparing all of my thoughts. The fact is, Israel, from what I just read, if you listen, they were set on their idols, comfortable in the way that their things were, but they didn't consider what was to come because of their transgressions. This was their history. This is where the world is today. People live in the moment and they don't consider the consequences of their sinful behaviors. And we don't want to be that people. And listen, we're talking about foresight. I'm not applying this to what happened in El Paso yesterday. If you go to Walmart, the last thing you're thinking is going to happen is some guy is going to come from outside or whatever actually happened, maybe we don't even know yet, and start shooting up people. You're thinking bread and milk and supplies for your home and maybe school supplies and whatever else. These are unforeseeable things that happened yesterday. Unforeseeable. But what's not unforeseeable is that unless the Lord comes, we're all going to die. That could be by a gunman. That could be by an automobile. Every time some kind of violence happens, it's the gun's fault. People kill people. People kill people. If they don't have guns, they'll have something else. Murder is, like I said at the beginning of Bible class, goes back to Genesis chapter 4 with Cain and Abel. There weren't guns. People will find a way to kill people. And you could do massive amount of damage. Some of the most vulnerable places on earth are places like hospitals. Do you know how easy it would be to explode a hospital because of all the oxygen that runs through the walls? I mean, a match could kill thousands of people in a heartbeat. And a metal detector doesn't pick that up. We live in a very vulnerable society. Death is a certainty regardless of whether it comes by somebody's malicious acts or not. What we do have foresight in is that fact. That tomorrow doesn't belong to us. We're not to boast of tomorrow, Proverbs 27 and verse 1. We're supposed to live prepared today. So if you were to apply anything, what we would want to be able to say today, what I would want to be able to preach today, if one of our members were caught in that yesterday, is that we know he went on or she went on to paradise from what we can tell. I'd want to be able to say that. I would hate to, you know, my mind has constantly been on the Luna family and the Remes family and hoping that they're not involved in what happened because I know their end. And had I known that that happened, today would have to be that message of I know where they are and it's not paradise. Don't live like that. Apply yesterday to that in this light. Now I'm going to come back to our previously scheduled message. Deuteronomy chapter 8. I'm pretty sure I'm telling you the right place. Deuteronomy 8 is what I'm going to read from. Verses 11 through 20. Deuteronomy chapter 8. There's the 8. I'm going to begin at verse 11. start circling things up here so I don't look at those weird looks like, huh? The point in this context is Israel was not unprepared in the sense of warning. So everything that they faced because of their sins in the Old Testament, God had told them what was going to come. So they had foreknowledge of what was to come. Just like we have foreknowledge, we transgress our Lord, of what is to come. In Deuteronomy 8, beginning verse 11, and I'm going to go down through verse 20. It says, "Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping His commandments and His judgments, His statutes, which I command thee this day. Lest when thou hast eaten and art full, and hast built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when thy herds, thy flocks multiply, thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, all that thou hast is multiplied, then thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage, who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions, and drought that there was no water, who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, and that he might prove thee, to do thee good at thy later end. Thou shalt say in thine heart, my power and the might of my hand hath got me this wealth. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish the covenant which he sware unto thy fathers, as it is this day. And it shall be, if thou do at all forget the Lord thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day that ye shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroyed before your face, so you shall perish, because you would not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God." He had warned them. And you know what? He wished they would have listened. You know, if you when you think of a parent saying, "I wish you would have listened to me. Had you not just did that, then you wouldn't be facing this." I don't know why people think when a loving person in your life gives you a warning that it's something you should ignore. It's not logical. Somebody gave you a warning, you ought to be aware of why they gave you a warning. Look at Deuteronomy 5 and verse 29. God wished they would have listened. He says, "Oh, that there were such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it might be well with them and their children forever." And he says stuff like that in other contexts, like we studied in Ezekiel 33. It wasn't his desire that they would perish. Or in Isaiah 48, 17 and 18. Oh, that they would have. Oh, you know, that God's wishing. When I give a warning, please listen. Well, here's what people do with foresight. Instead of looking at what could happen and what will happen if you take certain courses, people often choose to live in the moment and be careless about the results of what is to come from it. Look at Isaiah chapter 10, verses 1 through 3. Isaiah chapter 10. Verses 1 through 3. I think I said Deuteronomy 13 earlier, didn't I? I'm sorry. And I'm hearing it, and I'm listening back, thinking about what I said. I certainly did have you turn to the wrong place. Sorry about that. In Isaiah chapter 10, and I'm sure looking at Isaiah 10, verses 1 through 3. Don't worry, I'm going to be going slower today all of a sudden. Won't be blazing through this lesson. He says, "Woe unto them that decree unrighteous decrees, that write grievousness which they have prescribed, to turn aside the needy from judgment, to take away the right from the poor of my people, that widows may be their prey, that they may rob the fatherless. And what will you do in the day of visitation, and in the desolation which shall come from far? To whom will you flee for help, and where will you leave your glory?" So this kind of plays into a little bit of what we talked about in our Bible study earlier. Plays into what you see in the New Testament. You're taking from people right now, and you're thinking, look at all the goods that I'm getting. Look at all. Okay, now you turn away from God. Now punishment's going to come on you. And then what? Then what? Like people that there's a phrase I know when sometimes when our brethren are going through things in the workplace, something that I've said hundreds of times is don't burn your bridges. Don't burn your bridges. I used to tell Trey, he would get irritated with people, and I would tell him, you know, that could be your future boss, your future employer. Be careful how you treat them. Have some foresight that what you're about to do might turn around and bite you in the butt later on, bite you in the rear end later on. How many times do we think like that? Do we think my actions might come back to haunt me 10 years down the road, 15 down the road, or whatever the case might be. Now we look at these Old Testament scriptures, we got to remember they're there for our learning. Romans 15:4. We can take great valuable lessons. Once you get a warning, take heed to it. Think about it. It's not good to act without forethought. Where's this going to lead? What's the consequences? What might happen? Look at Proverbs chapter 21. We're going to look at verse 5. Back in the time that we bought our home here in El Paso, there was a push in the housing market to do these certain loans that I don't fully understand, so I'm not going to comment too much on, but just to say this. I know you paid a lot of interest, and that left you with a very low mortgage payment. And that was presented to me by the bank. You know, you can pay a really low mortgage payment. I mean, it's ridiculously low. And then I said, okay, well, that doesn't make no sense. How am I ever going to pay the house off if the mortgage payment is that low? And then you find out there's a balloon payment coming down the road where, well, no, that's when you refinance. Well, the bank loved it because you were just paying interest. Just paying interest for an X number of years. And then you'd have to go refinance and get along. Well, what happened across America to a lot of people is they did that, but their home value did not increase. It decreased. And they could not refinance as a result for the amount of the value of the loan compared to what their home value currently was. And a lot of people in America lost their homes. You know, there's a saying that goes around the world, if it sounds too good to be true. Oh, man. When something sounds too good to be true, it is. Very generally too good to be true. Thinking ahead. What's going to... Not in the moment. In the moment, oh, I only have to pay $200 a month. Sounds good to me. That's in the moment. What about in 5 years? What about in 10? What about in 15? What then? Proverbs 21 and verse 5 says, "The thoughts of the diligent tend only to plenteousness, but everyone that is hasty only to want." The idea of hasty is hurried. You want to be diligent. You want to be thoughtful. You don't want to be in a hurry. The world knows that we are tempted very easily by being in a hurry. How much of our culture is set up about right now? About immediate decision making. Impulse decisions. Have you ever seen something that goes on sale for a limited time? Why is it on sale for a limited time? To get you there now. Have you ever gone to Albertsons to buy those steaks and then they're out? And will they give you a rain check? What'd they just do? They got you in the store. Now you're there, you're going to buy some things, very likely. You know the marketing strategies that places come up with prey on this very fact that people act in haste, that people do things upon impulse. Why do you have to go so far back in the store to get what you actually need, the necessities of life, milk, etc., and pass all the goodies while you're going down? Because that wasn't on your list. And you don't think these marketing strategists know that's not on your list? Oh, they know that's not on your list. How come you just paid $1.50 for a candy bar when you could have got six for $3 at the other end of the store? Because you're standing in this long line wondering why they don't have more clerks. And all of a sudden this $1.50 candy bar is calling out to you, "Buy me, buy me." And marketing strategists know you act on impulse. And you buy it. And then someday you go back there and you're like, "Man, I could have got six of these for $1.50 more. Why did I buy that one?" Because of that marketing strategy. They got you right there in that line. Why'd you buy a dollar whatever soda when you could have got a 2 liter cheaper? And the soda, because it's in the cooler. This is a cold soda. And I'm standing in line. You ever done the math on that? You know why disciplined people make lists and stick to them? I'm going to tell you what. You go shopping with me, it's the list. In and out. I only see people and talk to them, but that's it, right, Mike? We bumped into Walmart the other day. Katrina went off. Probably bought things not on the list. I'm speed racer through that store. Go. Trey's shaking his head. I remember one time Trey and I go grocery shopping. He said, "Why are you so much faster than Mom?" The list. I don't care how good of a marketing strategy. In fact, I consider myself a loser when they convince me to buy something that I didn't intend to buy. Works well for my personality. I'm not condemning your grocery shopping. I'm just pointing out the fact that it is a human weakness to act on impulse. It is such a weakness that every marketing strategist on the planet knows it. It comes in your email. It shows up on your social media pages. click here, buy this, do it now. If you were to think about it, you probably wouldn't. More times than not. But they know how to market that, get it now. There's a great context in Proverbs chapter 6. In fact, I've written articles and maybe even preached sermons titled, Go to the Ant. It's amazing how the most simplest things in life can teach you great, valuable lessons. In Proverbs chapter 6, beginning in verse 6, it says, Go to the ant, thou sluggard, so a lazy person. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat, or in other words, her food in the summer, and gathereth her food and the harvest. Look at the foresight of ants. He says, How long will thou sleep, O sluggard, when thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands of sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. And yesterday as I'm going through this lesson, you can kind of see where some of these scriptures took my mind, and I'm sure it took yours. Just the illustration the Lord uses here. Somebody armed, invading. That's how the unprepared person gets brought into poverty. It is that illustration. It's sudden. It's quick. You're not ready for it. The ant, on the other hand, knows this colony needs to eat. They're busy. You ever watched ants? Man, they never take a seat and watch the game. Just going at it. Constantly preparing. Constantly preparing. Constantly preparing. When we talked earlier about counting the cost, one of the things the Lord has provided us with is brethren. Now, the ant doesn't need a guide, an overseer, or a ruler. Nobody to tell them anything. And they're able to do it. God has given us a greater advantage. He's put you in the midst of people that can offer you wise counsel. Remember the man sitting there considering going to war? Go get counsel. Look at Proverbs chapter 11 and verse 14. It says, Where no counsel is, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. And Proverbs 15:22 teaches similar points. So Proverbs 11:14 and then 15:22 teaches a similar point. When you have people that you can go to and say, Hey, what do you think about this decision? And you may need to go to more than one person. If you come to me about something I'm unaware of, that's what I say. I don't really know what to tell you there. I don't have experience in that particular situation or the decision that you're making. Maybe you should talk to this person or that person. But among us, we're going to find people that have experience, gone through, and knowledge on particular things that we might not be so knowledgeable in. So we're making decisions, we can get counsel. Well, what do you think about this? That's going to make you pause, not act in a hasty way. Going to get some wisdom. Going to be able to make informed decisions where you're going to be able to weigh what could come about from this. Now look at Proverbs 27. When we think about the ant again, Proverbs 27, verses 23 through 27, and the lesson of the ant, counselors aside, Proverbs 27, 23 through 27 says, Be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks, and look well to thy herds. For riches are not forever, and doth the crown endure to every generation. The hay appeareth, and the tender grass showeth itself, and the herbs of the mountains are gathered. The lambs are for thy clothing, and the goats or the price of the field. And thou shalt have goat's milk enough for thy food, for the food of thy household, and for the maintenance for thy maidens. Do you look ahead? Money's not forever. Riches are not forever. Man, I thought long about this point yesterday. The news was going around showing all the places that were closed in El Paso. And I thought, oh, what about people that just let their groceries get down to nothing? And they needed to find a grocery store. Now, I ended up being curious. I went and drove around. Everything in our area except Chick-fil-A and one other restaurant was booming. I mean, our Walmart had people coming and going. The parking lot, I was kind of surprised, actually, how many people were out at the theater and everything else. Life seemed as usual in Far East El Paso. It's kind of a little shocked based on what I was hearing from the news. The news had me thinking I was going to be the only one driving around. And now there's a lot of traffic, a lot of people out. Businesses were busy, food places. Guess people were hungry. But what if something struck El Paso and the town was really shut down? What if? What type of person are you in preparation? Are you the, I'm going to wait till we have nothing in the house to eat, then I'm going to go to the store person? Or do you have something in reserve? If events like yesterday can teach you anything, look well to your supplies. We don't have flocks and herds to look to. We have cupboards, and at least I don't think anybody here in here has. I know somebody's got some chickens. But for the most part, most of us need to go to grocery stores and other things. Same thing. What if all the gas stations close down? And you need to get somewhere. Are you the person that waits till the car's going beep, 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 beep? Like, if the car just, you're out of gas. Really? Then what? What happens if the electricity goes out? You know you won't get gas in El Paso if there's no electric. And someone says, but I keep plenty of cash on hand. Well, that's good because ATMs might not work. But I got news for you. Have you ever shopped at Walmart and they didn't enter the right number on the computer and have no idea how to make change? Worse than a terrorist attack would be computers not working. Because I don't think if you gave them $20 for $19.99 that they would figure that you get a penny back. Because they get lost. Pull out the phone. We ought to be people that know these things can happen. And we get too confident and comfortable in our luxuries. And we don't think about what can happen. What do you tell your hungry child, wife, yourself, if you have nothing to eat? Only because you didn't prepare. I told Katrina last night, she probably didn't know where this thought was coming from. I said, good thing is we have enough food in the freezer and everything to feed the brethren for about 5 days. Y'all could come to my house. Most of the time we're pretty overprepared. I'm guessing Jeff is like that too. I didn't have enough water because y'all killed it the last Saturday night at my house. We had enough food. But do you think ahead? Bad things can happen. And you just can't take for granted that everything's always going to work as smoothly as you're accustomed to. Bad things can happen and things can fall apart. And your immediate survival might depend on you just thinking a little bit ahead, planning a little bit for the unforeseeable by knowing that bad things happen. Yesterday's a good testament to that. Well, I just depend on Brian. He said he had food at his house. Catch me on the wrong day, I'm going to tell you. You remember that lesson I preached? Why are you calling me? I really wouldn't let any of you starve. Look at Galatians chapter 6. There's a point where we should not depend on other people, where we have to be able to stand on our own. Foresight equips you not to be dependent on other people. What do you train your children for? When you're raising your children, you're training your children so that when they grow up, they can live on their own. That's what you're doing. You're trying to educate them in the ways of life. Because you know as a parent, you're not always going to be there for them to depend upon you. That principle is in all areas of life. In Christ, as you're a babe in Christ, you're very heavily dependent upon your brethren. As you grow, you should not be so as heavily dependent on your brethren. In Galatians chapter 6, there's some principles here to take away. Now, I'm going to start verse 1 and go through verse 9. It says, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." Now notice the progression of this context. He says, "For if a man thinketh something when he has nothing, he deceiveth himself. But let every man prove his own work, and then he shall have rejoicing in himself alone and not another. For every man shall bear his own burden." Look at the progression of that. Bear one another's burdens, but not continually. You need to be able to carry yourself. You need to be able to lift your own burden. He says in verse 6, "Let him that is taught in the word communicate to him that teacheth all good things." And then back to individual accountability. "Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of his flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not." There's a point where you have to have the ability to know, hey, brethren can be crutches, but I need to strengthen my legs so that I can walk on my own and carry my own weight. It can't be a continuation of these things. That's the spiritual. This applies in the physical too. Look over at 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Verses 11 and 12. Paul writes to the brethren in Thessalonica. He said that you study to be quiet, to do your own business, to work with your own hands, as we commanded you, that ye may walk honestly toward them without, that you may have lack of nothing. Now listen something here. This is what he says in the first epistle. You need to work and take care of yourself. Guess what? Some of the brethren in Thessalonica didn't listen. Because the second epistle in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, Paul tells them to withdraw themselves from those that walk disorderly. Well, what were they doing? He says in verse 10, "For even when we were with you, this we command you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat." The brethren were told that those people who refused to work and provide for themselves need to be put out of the congregation, not fed. So whether it be spiritual things, Galatians 6, 1 through 9, or physical things, 1 Thessalonians 4, 11 and 12, and 2 Thessalonians 3, 6 through 10, we need to grow up to a point where we can stand on our own two feet. Now, of course, there's going to be exceptions. In the physical world, there's people that can't take care of themselves. In the spiritual world, you might have your one talent brethren that need carried more than others. That's where the strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak. Romans 15, 1 through 3. But outside of those exceptions, here's some foresight, some foreknowledge to think about. God expects you to stand on your own, to walk on your own, and to bear your own burden. So when you need help, take it. Take it so that you can stand up. But don't jump in the arms of your brethren and say, "Now carry me the rest of the way." Get the help up. And once you get pointed in the right direction, start walking. Start doing it on your own, bearing that your own weight. "Oh, but man, I'm just not strong enough. I'm not as capable as other people." Let's go back to the ant. How big and strong are ants? Look at Proverbs chapter 30. Verse 25. Proverbs 30 and verse 25 says, "The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their meat in the summer." It's not a strength thing. It's a determination thing. If you can know you're about to starve to death, that ought to be motivation enough to take care of yourself. If you can know you're going to go to hell if you don't stand on your own 2 feet spiritually, that ought to be motivation to take care of yourself. In Proverbs chapter 26, the Lord talks about the people that make the excuses. Verses 13 through 16 of Proverbs 26 says, "The slothful man said, 'There's a lion in the way. A lion is in the streets. As the door turneth upon his hinges, so doth the slothful man upon his bed. The slothful hideth his hand in his bosom. It grieved him to bring it again to his mouth. The sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than 7 men can render a reason.'" The slothful, the sluggard, they're full of excuses. They just want to do nothing. Think about that illustration as a door turns on hinges. Man in his bed. Lazy person in bed. "I just don't want to do anything." I got news for you. A lot of us wake up days where we don't want to do anything. The difference between the slothful and the diligent isn't in that you don't want to do anything. It's the diligent, get up and do it anyway. And the slothful finds 50 excuses as to why not. If you're hungry enough and there's a lion in the street, he's not going to prevent you from going out. You're going to kill him and eat him. What type of person are you? Where do you reside? What if you leave yourself unprepared? Here's some scriptural wisdom for us to think about. Look at Proverbs 20, verse 4. What if we leave ourselves unprepared? Physically. It says, "The sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold, therefore shall he beg in the harvest and have nothing." Old Testament, New Testament principle lining up there. You don't do anything, nobody should help you. God's people weren't going to, in the Old or the New Testament, help people who refused to do anything on their own. Capable, able people. Spiritually speaking, look at Matthew chapter 25. I got a bunch of emails yesterday from people in churches of Christ asking about what was going on in El Paso. I've never heard of anyone that emailed me yesterday. I was like, some preacher in Florida, it's some preacher in North Carolina. I'm like, I can't remember the others, didn't even ask who they were. How are things in El Paso? Do the brethren there have need of anything? And I responded and started cutting and pasting my response. I said, as far as I know, the saints in El Paso are okay. That's even before I knew physically that the saints were okay. Because if you died in Christ, you're still okay. I said, the people that I'm concerned about are the 20 unprepared souls that have left this world. And all we can do is mourn them. And the others whose lives hang on the balances, who might meet our Lord unprepared to do it. That's our concern. That wasn't what their concern was. Their concern was, I don't even know. My response didn't get responses, so I don't know what. But it seemed like it was more along the physical. More along the, can we send a semi-truck full of bread and whatever else to El Paso, probably Church of Christ disaster relief effort or something at play in some of those messages. Far greater then the physical is the spiritual. Matthew 25, I'm sure we're aware of this, but reading it ought to hit home, especially days like today. It says, "Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins," I'm beginning at verse 1 of Matthew 25, "which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept." Sounds like a lot of the verses we've been reading, right? rest is more important to me than being prepared. So they're slothful, spiritually speaking. Verse 6, at midnight there was a cry made, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go ye out to meet him." This morning as I was rereading through this, I thought of Dayton, Ohio. Katrina and I used to live about 25 miles away from the Oregon district in Dayton, Ohio, where all the second attack of yesterday, or at 1 o'clock this morning, happened. And I was thinking, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, most of us are sleeping and not paying very much attention to what's going on, and people are dying. People are dying unprepared for death, and here this rings out. Not at a time when you're looking for it. So, verse 7, all the virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. They're getting ready to the marriage, okay? The foolish said to the wise, "Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out." Now let's think about preparation. Come back to your mind here. Are you the run-on-E person? Because in a time of crisis, would you expect somebody to dip into their gas tank to give you gas so you can get where you need to go, and they take away from them while they were prepared and you weren't? Do you think it's unreasonable that they would tell you no? Think about how this parable plays out for both spiritual and physical applications. If you're unprepared, there's a point where even the most caring and loving people are going to say, "That's on you. That's on you." So in verse 9, the wise answered, saying, "Not so. Lest there be not enough for us and you, but go ye out rather than to sell and buy for yourselves." While they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. We sing a song where we talk about unprepared. Unprepared. Or we have sung a song, I can't remember. Verse 11, afterwards came the other virgin saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." I mean, they have a reasonable excuse, don't they? But he answered and said, "Verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh." The Lord teaches us to be a people who, when you know something is coming, but not when, be prepared for it at any time. There are so many applications there that we could have many lessons about. I'll leave it to you to make them. But when it comes down to forethought, look at Proverbs 22 and verse 3. And if you're taking notes, you can write down Proverbs 27:12. Proverbs 22:3 is what I'm going to be reading from. I'm going to be reading from Proverbs 22:3. Proverbs 27:12 teaches essentially the same thing. It says, "A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished." When you know it's coming, be prudent. Be prepared. Foresee what is going to be there. Ask yourself spiritually, what if the Lord were to come today? I mean, yeah, we've got the imminent threat of life on a daily basis. But you might hide from the gunman. You might live through the car accident. Lord comes, there's finality for all of humanity. Tomorrow is the first day of eternity. Not, or however you want to phrase that. Today's the first day of eternity. But there's not a tomorrow to get it right. Come back to the book of Matthew chapter 24. Matthew 24, 1 through 34 talks about the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple in Jerusalem. But Jesus answered a second question where he was talking about the end of the world and the judgment. I'm going to read verses 42 through the end of the chapter. So Matthew 24, 42 through 51. Right before the parable of the 10 virgins. He says, "Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord doth come, but know this, if the goodman of the house had known that watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would have not suffered his house to be broken up." I just want to stop there for a minute. When we know something is coming, we can be prepared. That's what Jesus is illustrating here. You know somebody's about to break into your house. You're going to take defensive measures. Now He's telling you, I am coming. So He continues this point, verse 44. Therefore, be also ready, for such an hour you think not the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household to give him meat in due season? Blessed that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you, he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But if that evil servant shall say in his heart, My Lord delayeth his coming, shall begin to smite his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, an hour he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder and appoint him his portion with hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Jesus says, get ready, I'm coming. You know it is sinful for us to boast about tomorrow? It's not sinful to think about tomorrow or prepare for... I mean, what's today's lesson all about? Be ready for what could be coming. Foresight. But to boast of it, to say, I'll get my soul ready tomorrow, or anything else. Look at James chapter 4, 13 through 16. And again, when you pay special attention to the context, that tomorrow might not come. And not just because of a world event, but the event. In James 4, 13 through 16, go to now you that say today or tomorrow we'll go to such a city, continue there a year, buy and sell and get gain. Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. For you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. But now you rejoice in all your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. The Lord could make it so there is no tomorrow for this world. It's in His hands. He says He's going to come as a thief in the night. We have read that in an hour that you think not, we can't get boastful and start guaranteeing that we can do something tomorrow. Even on a situation where you remove the Lord, you can't guarantee tomorrow. Who's to know you won't wake up with some illness and never get out of your bed again? I mean, certainly you've seen this happen in our world where people have gone from healthy to unhealthy in an instant. And in a very brief period of time, their life was taken. I knew a gospel preacher in Cedar Park years ago. He didn't know he had cancer. Found out, and a week later, it was gone. Done. Didn't have months or years to prepare. He was also an elder in that congregation. Boy, I teach you a lot of lessons about that, because after he left this world, that congregation went down the tubes. Down the tubes. By all means, if you could talk to a man like that, he would tell you he had plans. That he was going to teach on this and he was going to teach on that. Thinking too much like you have tomorrow. Thinking too much like there's not an urgency with which we must act. Especially when it comes to the salvation of our and other souls. This isn't a long game. It's a short one. To think about the image of your life as a vapor. Last week we had talked about Luke 12, 13 through 48. And part of that is take no thought for tomorrow. Three times in that context. And what Jesus was teaching them is don't be overly worried about the physical. The balance that you can put together between that and this is you need to be prepared if tomorrow comes, but not like tomorrow is coming. So let me rephrase. You need to be prepared in case tomorrow happens, but you ought not be counting on tomorrow coming. You need to live in a way physically and spiritually where if tomorrow arises, you are reasonably prepared for what that day may bring. You have forethought. But you ought to be spiritually prepared that if tomorrow does not come, you're ready for eternity to begin. Ready to hear what the Lord will have to say to you. With balance, boy, that's kind of the key to every lesson we ever talk about is balance. Don't be to the point where you just think everything's always going to be all right. It's not always going to be all right. I mean, are you dumb? It's not always all right. Go visit people in the hospital today and ask them when they went shopping, did they think everything was going to be okay? Oh yeah, they didn't plan on dying, losing life, and all these things that happened yesterday. Ask those five foolish virgins who are left outside. Who will say, shouldn't somebody care about the fact that we're unprepared? No, you were warned. The Lord is not guilty of not warning us. The abundance of warning is before us every time we open this book. Be prepared. With proper balance. Look at Proverbs 24 and I'll start bringing this to a conclusion. With proper balance, learn to prioritize. I ask you a question. If you were a settler in early America, would you be more concerned about food or shelter? Think about that. Would you be more concerned about food or shelter? Would you just start cutting down trees and building a house and not be concerned about where the water's going to come from and where your food's going to come from? And Proverbs 24:27 said, prepare thy work without and make it fit for thyself in the field. And afterwards, build thine house. What can you live with and what can you live without? Food and water are necessities of life. More important than a good structure to live under. When you look at your life, you have to prioritize sometimes. You have to think, what is most important? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. My soul ought to be 1. Provisions for life ought to be 2, 3, 4, etc. Spiritual things ought to be 1. Because I'm going to die no matter how much food I have, no matter how much clothing, no matter how much shelter, no matter how good my health insurance is, no matter how great my doctor is. Someday, the Lord doesn't come first, I'm going to die. Got to prioritize. The Bible teaches us to prioritize and have forethought. Physically and spiritually. I'm not saying you have to be me. In fact, I would hope you wouldn't. I'm a little too prepared for things I prepare for. Sometimes it's mental anguish to be thinking about so many scenarios all the time. Now, don't want to talk about it and make you start thinking about it. But where my mind goes, it isn't fun, but I'm prepared. There's a balance there. My personality is to be OCD about it. You don't have to look at me. So basically what I'm telling you is I'm not your example in this. You don't have to be me. You don't have to be a year ahead on your car payment. I go a little bit further than what's necessary. But you can't be on the opposite end either. You can't hope that Walmart's going to be open today. You can't guarantee you're going to be able to make it right with the Lord before tonight. You have to be prepared for the inevitable now. So what do you do with information? My concluding verse is Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 7. What good is it to have foresight? What good is it to have the information to be prepared and to do nothing? And Hebrews 11 and verse 7, by faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet. Moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. Noah got information that a flood was going to occur, something that had never been seen on earth. It hadn't even rained. Mist came up from the earth. That was where moisture came from. It hadn't even rained. He, with faith, took action. 120 years in preparing an ark for something that had never happened on earth. He believed and took action. You know how many people 10 days into that would quit? 10 days would say, well, this is going a little too far. The millions that died in the flood. That's the mentality that leads to unprepared. The kind of people that live in New Orleans, Louisiana, that live below sea level and rebuild the house in the exact same spot where it got destroyed. My goodness, I do not feel sorry for you. When you know something is inevitable and you take absolutely no precaution and you do it again, I mean, the first time's bad enough. But again, let's be smart. We have all the wisdom the world will never know in our hands. Let's use it. Let's be ready. Today, if you're unprepared to meet our Lord, you know what you need to do. We can help you, whether it is to become a Christian or to be strengthened by the saints. We extend the invitation. If you're capable and willing, we'll stand and sing number 7.